Hey. You want that to stay up there?
Do you want to put your thing up?
No. Huh? But then just move it over so I can...
What would you like up on the screen?
Nothing. Okay. No, that's... that's good. Okay, good morning, everyone. Okay, we have our last session. I do hope we'll have other opportunities in the future to continue to learn. Keep your eyes out of Mitzvah Shem for the book. So far, it's called Three Steps Forward, and it should be going to the publisher very, very soon. Hopefully, going to finish tomorrow, we'll head there, and go to the publisher. So these have been, what we have done together is two chapters out of 26. So Baruch Hashem, there's a lot to think about with tefillah. There's a huge world of tefillah. And I want to do today another core idea in Jewish thought, which is basically how tefillah works. How does it work? We know we're supposed to daven. We know that we think that the davening that we do makes a difference. But exactly how does tefillah work? Now, this is a very, very large topic. Several chapters worth of material. How does tefillah work, for example, in terms of schar va'onesh? Reward and punishment. Right? A very simple question. If I'm deserving of something, do I need tefillah in order to get it? And if I'm not deserving of something, can tefillah override the laws of reward and punishment? And how does it do that? So that's a question that's been discussed by the Rishonim and the Achronim. It's very difficult to understand. How does this work? Does tefillah get God to change his mind? Does he change his mind? And how does this work? So I'd like today to focus on briefly on one opinion and then to discuss how the whole world that doesn't pray gets their paycheck too. And if so, what we're praying for. It's a very, very essential idea, fundamental idea in terms of how tefillah works. In Parsha Shmos, we're going to see soon, just in a couple of weeks, a debate between Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the burning bush. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to be a leader. He's not interested. He thinks he's not the right person. And Moshe Rabbeinu throws out reason after reason why he's not the guy. He's not the guy. One of the reasons he brings is that he's got a stutter. He didn't do well in speech class. He's not the right guy. How can someone like this come before Paro? HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, don't worry. I'll be with you. And I'll also send who? Aaron did well in speech class, so Aaron will come with you. The Ramban there, it's not on the source sheet, but the Ramban asks a very, very simple question. Moshe Rabbeinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't speak well, I have a stutter. What should HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response have been? Poof! You don't have a stutter. I mean... Misam Pela Adam. In fact, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response is. Misam Pela Adam. Who created speech in the first place? But I'm going to send Aaron. So the Ramban asks a question. The Ramban constantly asks questions that if you or I would have asked, we'd get kicked out of class. Right? But the Ramban asks a lot of these kinds of questions. And the Ramban says, so what's going on here? Why doesn't he fix his speech? It couldn't be that there's a lack of merit. It's Moshe Rabbeinu. It's the cause couldn't be more important to get the Jewish people out of Egypt. In other words, you don't need to convince HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we want this thing to go well. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no. Why? The Ramban says, because Moshe didn't ask for it. Moshe didn't ask to be healed. He didn't pray to be healed. And says the Ramban, if you don't pray, it doesn't happen. Now, to be fair, the Ramban could be responding to a more general idea that Moshe didn't want to do it, so Hashem didn't make it easier for him. Maybe it's not a fundamental idea about prayer in general, But here, Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, you're giving me a hard time. I'm not going to reward you giving me a hard time by giving you proper speech. But that idea that a person could be fully deserving of something, that it works for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it works for your tafkid, it works for the world's tafkid, it all makes sense. But you have to open up your mouth and ask for it, is stated clearly by the Ramchal in the Derech Hashem. Inyan Tefillah, look at the first source. Inyan ha-tfilah hu ki hine min hasdarim shesidra ha-chachma ha-elyona. Already you see where he's going. Tfilah works within the natural system. It is min hasdarim shesidra ha-chachma ha-elyona. God in his ultimate wisdom created this system just like you need water for the plant to grow, sunlight for the plant to grow, nutrients for the plant to grow. You need prayer for the plant to grow. Shaliot hanivraim mekablim shefa mimenu yitbarach, because the creations receive their bounty from him, tsarich sheyitoruhem elav, they need to rise themselves up, they need to awaken themselves to him, viyitkarvulo, get close to him, viyavakshu panav, and ask him, ukefi hitorotam lo, kein yimashech alehem shefa. And according to how much they ask him, that's how much they get. In bold, v'im lo yit'oreru lo yimashech lahem. And if they don't ask, they don't get. He has nothing in here. What about reward and punishment? What about doing mitzvot? What about earning things? What about getting your due? What about the fact that this is the way you're supposed to go? This is the person you're supposed to meet. There's a basheret person to meet, we talked about. There's a basheret house to live in. There's a basheret job. There's a basheret neighborhood. It's probably in Israel. There's a basheret everything for every one of us. But the Ramchal couldn't say it more clearly. You also need to ask. The Maharal explains that it's as simple as basically putting out your hand. You can't receive something unless you put out your hand to get it. The person could want to give it to you. You could be deserving of it. It can make every sense that you get it. But unless you put out your hand, you can't be mekabel it. And that's essentially, says the Maharal, what tefillah is. Tefillah is appearing before Hashem and saying, I need something from you. Please give me something. It's converting yourself into something or someone that is ready to receive from Hashem. And this has many, many sources in Tanakh. There are many, many cases. Take a couple of weeks ago, Eliezer. Eliezer is going to find a wife for Yitzchak. I mean, talk about an important mission. This is the future of the whole Jewish people is on the line. And he's coming with the merit of Avraham and Yitzchak, who just did the Akedah a few years ago. And yet, when he gets to Haran, what does he do? He prays. And in the middle of his prayer, just as he finishes his prayer, boom, she comes. The Torah seems to be telling us that his prayer was what brings around Rivka. His prayer? Who needs his prayer? What is that needed for? Because Baruch Hu doesn't want to provide a wife for Yitzchak. He promised in the Torah that we're going to have Ki bi Yitzchak yikarei l'chazara. No. There's a set way in the world, and that's the way we get things. Prayer in translation here, says Rav Yechezkel Levenstein, Mashkiach of the Mir, prayer is first and foremost in every effort, and there is no matter which is not rooted in prayer. One merits God's beneficence only through prayer and the request to benefit from his kindness. Without prayer, one does not merit anything. And this is true not only for the acquisition of material things, it is true of spiritual gains as well. We have to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be able to do tshuva. We do that every day. We have to pray that we and our family and our children be able to get closer to him. The problem is, this is blatantly not true. I didn't come here this morning to just tell you that if you don't pray, you're not going to get anything. Most of the world does not pray. And even if you tell me most of the world prays, they don't pray to the right place. Praying to you-know-who is not going to help you at all. So how could it be that the Ramchal says that if you don't, even if something's coming to you, we have all these sources that say if it's coming to you, how could it be that on the one hand, we have all these sources that say if you don't pray, you're not going to get it. But most people don't pray. Oh, maybe it's just the Jewish people. Do most Jewish people pray? No. So what's going on? Again, this is the kind of, this is for sure the kind of question you get kicked out of class for. Right, what do you mean, Rabbi? How could it be? What are you telling me that you have to pray? Most people don't pray. And last I checked, most of them are doing fine. And there are lots of people who pray who are not doing so well. Is there any way to understand this phenomenon? I believe there is. I believe there is. And it's right in front of our eyes. And it's so relevant right now. And it applies to tefillah as well. In Parshas Ekev, Ki Ha'aretz Asher Atav Hashem Alirishta, the people are coming, they're on the border of coming to Eretz Yisrael. It's been 40 years in the desert. Moshe Rabbeinu is continuing to try to sell the people whose parents and grandparents rejected this offer to come to Israel. They were afraid. They died out in the desert. And now you have a whole generation of kids who he wants to convince it's going to be great when we get to Israel. Now, mind you, this generation is much more spoiled than the last generation. Talk about a generation gap. The parents and grandparents were slaves in Egypt, and the grandchildren ate the man and had clothes that never went bad, although they didn't get new clothes, okay, but their clothes never went bad. Their clothes were washed as they were wearing them. They didn't have to go to the bathroom the entire... Talk about pretty spoiled crew. And now they're being told, okay, starting in a few weeks, you're going to all be farmers. Okay, this is what's coming. They don't know what a farmer means. They've never seen a farmer. They've never met a farmer. They've been in the wilderness, the desert. They haven't been in a place where the land was cultivated. And these people are likely not that excited about making this transition. In fact, some explain that that's why their grandparents didn't want to come in. They liked being in the desert with Hashem, with the clouds of glory, with the man, with everything. So what does he say? He says, for the land that you're about to enter and possess is not like the land of Egypt. Don't worry, guys. The land you're coming to is not like Egypt, from which you have come. There, the grain you sowed had to be watered by your own labors, like a vegetable garden. The land of Egypt, oh, that was tough. Because there, you had to water your own crops. But the land you're about to cross into and possess, a land of hills and valleys, soaks up its water from the rains of heaven. Wow. It's going to be so easy to make a living when you guys get to Israel. Rashi says, which seems to be the simple interpretation of the psukim, Rashi says, wait a minute. Do you guys know how Egypt works? The Nile overflowed. The Nile overflowed. And it just went through channels. And the channels, yeah, you had to sometimes take out a thing and make sure that it went to your field. Maybe once in a while, a few leaves fell in there, you had to take them out. But the Nile was a very, very dependable source of water. Water equals money. Water equals money. Right? We were a few years ago, we went on a fascinating trip to Tzipori. Tzipori was where Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was, the Sanhedrin was. This fascinating mosaic work there. I recommend, you have to go with a guide because you have to see what you're seeing. But Tzipori, absolutely fascinating. You're walking on the streets that you know Rabbi Yehuda Anasi walked on. That's where the Sanhedrin, after it left, the Sanhedrin, when it was wandering around, that's where the Sanhedrin went in northern Israel. So there's a whole mall there, a mall from 2,000 years ago, from 1,800 years ago. There's a mall from 1,800 years ago, and there are all these pictures of these international scenes. It's fascinating. And one of them is Egypt. And you saw on the picture of Egypt, there were these notches, like this height chart next to the water, next to a picture of the Nile. What used to happen was that depending on how high the Nile would rise, they would look how high the Nile was in a particular spring, I guess it was, and they would determine taxes based on what the Nile was up to. Because it was clear, there was a clear equivalence. The Nile's up, so our economy's up. They were able to see how much water was there, and they knew basically how much to charge people in taxes that given year. The Nile was an incredibly dependable source of income, source of sustenance. Moshe Rabbeinu comes and he tells the people, it's not going to be like that. What is he telling them that for? So Rashi says, Egypt required people to bring water from the Nile through their own toil, and this required them to lose sleep and exert themselves. And only lowlands were irrigated and not higher lands. You know, it's dependable. It's a lot of money. But it depends where you live. If you live in the higher lands in Egypt, then you have to pay people in order to schlep the water up there. But this land, Israel, is nourished by rainwater. While you sleep in your bed, God will provide water for the high and the low, revealed and hidden all at once. Oh, I'd so much prefer rainwater, because then the guys on the hill is like, ah, Gosh Baruch Hu is just dropping it right on me. That's the way the Rashi understands it. Rashi says the people had memories, or they'd been told about Egypt and how difficult it is sometimes to move water from place A to place B. And he's telling the people, don't worry, this is going to be easy when we get to Israel. It's just going to rain. Except that most of the time it doesn't rain. We don't know. We don't know. It's a land where sometimes it's going to rain and sometimes it's not going to rain. The Ramban jumps up. The Ramban says people would rather have a dependable source of income than a convenient source of income. Even if Rashi is in fact correct, even if Rashi's correct that it was a pain to take the water from over here over there, but at least I got water. I'd much rather know that I was going to make a living than say, okay, every 2 years will be a drought, but the year in between, wow, I'm going to sleep in my bed and it's going to rain on my field. Who wants that, says the Ramban. The Ramban says that the advantage of living in Israel is not a dependable life. The advantage of living in the land of Israel is not a consistent life. The advantage of living in Israel is a life that's dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Immediately dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And completely dependent upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As the next Pasuk says, Rashi doesn't quote the next Pasuk. The next Pasuk says, Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doresh Otah Tamid. A land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly looking at. Einei Hashem Elokecha Ba, the eyes of God are on it, Mireshit HaShana Ve'ad Acharit HaShana. And we know that this reference to Mireshit HaShana, from the beginning of the year, what's the beginning of the year? Rosh Hashanah. What does it mean that the eyes of God are on the land of Israel from the beginning of the year? It means that on Rosh Hashanah, it's determined what will happen, determined based on what? On our tfilos, on our masim tovim. And in fact, to support the opinion of the Ramban, what's the next thing after we get this revelation that Israel is going to be different than any other place? After we get this revelation, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduce? What's the next parsha in the Torah? V'haya im shamo atishmu el mitzvotai asher nochi mitzavetchem hayom. If you listen, then you'll get rain. The second paragraph of Shema. The Ramban says that what he's trying to tell them, and will this work with a nervous nation, is that the land you're going into is the land of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There you have to be good. There you have to rise to the occasion if you want the blessing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's in charge of every detail. Everything that happens there is under his direct watch. But you have to earn it. So what does that mean? And if I live in Egypt? So what does that mean about Egypt? What does that mean about five towns? What does that mean about everywhere else? It's clear that the difference here is not just between Egypt and Israel. That is the land that God's eyes are on all the time. So it's Israel and Chutz La'aretz, everywhere else. What's the deal in Chutz La'aretz? Outside of Israel, it seems to be saying that even if you don't behave, even if you don't do everything you're supposed to do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu may give you the water from the Nile. The water of the Nile. Egypt didn't have years where they had plenty and years where they had nothing. They had years where they had a little more, a little less. Every year, they were covered. So you could, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, live in Egypt. Or you could live in Israel. What's the decision that a person makes when they decide if they want to live in Egypt or they want to live in America or they want to live in Israel? They're deciding between two frameworks. One is a framework where everything I get is fully dependent on my actions, fully dependent on what I do. V'haya im shamoa tishma'u el mitzvotai. And there's an exact back and forth between the Kodesh Baruch Hu and the other is a place where it's not going to be so dependent on what you do. I'm just going to give you, I'm going to keep you going. Kodesh Baruch Hu keeps most of the world going without them earning anything. The vast majority of creatures in this world are supported by a Kodesh Baruch Hu without them doing a single mitzvah. They're not human beings. This concept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would keep the world going even though you haven't earned it, earning is only for a small group of people. What happens with the non-Jewish world in general? We already accept this fact that as a Jew, what happens to us anywhere in the world is more dependent on our actions. We have more hashkacha pratit. What we do has more of a connection to what we get. But it's different. You see, some people choose to be Jewish, but most people are born Jewish. But everyone decides where they're going to live. We can decide to live in Egypt, which has one kind of relationship with Hashem, where it's just autopilot. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you're good, don't worry about it. Or we could decide to live in Israel, and be forced to live in a higher level whose advantage is a relationship with Hashem. There's a famous idea of Rabbanim Pshischa. Rabbanim Pshischa asks, we know that the Nachash is a bad guy, right? First story in the Torah messes up the whole world. Nachash is a bad creature. The punishment of the Nachash is that it shall eat dirt. Now, we know eating dirt is, that's the worst thing you could do. You should eat dirt. But do snakes really care if they eat dirt? Dirt doesn't mean dirt. It just means things that are crawling on the ground. If I'm a snake, I'd be very happy to eat whatever's lying around. If you ever watch the Nature Channel, most animals spend a tremendous amount of time trying to figure out what to eat. The punishment of the Nachash was effectively that it'll be able to eat anything anywhere. What kind of punishment is that? Says Rabbanu Mabshischa, Kadosh Baruch Hu was telling the Nachash the ultimate punishment. I am not interested in you. You're on autopilot till the end of time. Yeah, you'll get your food, but you will, in a metaphysical way, have no reason for God. Everything will just come like this. What about Adam and Chava? Adam and Chava got some pretty terrible punishments. Oh my God. Adam and Chava got work, the need to really work hard for a living. Adam and Chava got pain of childbirth. Adam and Chava got pain of upbringing the kids. It's not just the pain of childbirth. It says in Rashi there very clearly, it's the pain of going through bringing up children. The Nachash got breakfast. And Adam and Chava got hard work and hard family life and physical pain?
What are the three things that cause us to pray more than anything else? Illness, parnasa, and family. And family. The punishment of Adam and Chava was that they should have to stay connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. That they would live a life that was not easy, but would constantly keep them connected. He took the Nachash off the grid. Nachash is done. We don't need you. Don't talk to me. I'm not interested in you. The punishment for Adam and Chava was to give them things that would be very painful, but would keep them connected. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Adam HaRishon, Ayeka, where are you? That disconnect would never again be there in history, because Adam and Chava would need to stay connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We asked the question at the beginning. What does it mean that we have to pray, that nothing comes without prayer, if most of the world doesn't pray and they get their stuff anyway? So how can that be? They're lying to us. The rabbis are trying to fool us by getting us to pray. We don't have to pray. Most people don't pray and they're just fine. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us not just free choice to make a bracha, to eat this, to eat that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us major questions of free choice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what world do you want to live in? What reality do you want to live in? We're told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we mentioned this last week, 2 weeks ago, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like a shadow. Tzel Yadecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a shadow by your side. Rav Kook explained that it meant that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is willing to follow us. He's willing to relate to us in the way that we choose to have that relationship. Now, every one of us has a choice. Just like we could choose to live in America or Israel, and that choice is not just about doing a mitzvah to go to Israel, the chiyuv to go to Israel, but it's a fundamentally different way of interacting with God. It's a place that it's much more difficult. Everything is difficult. Nothing is dependable. Look at it. Nothing is dependable. Nothing can be expected. Things can change on a moment's notice. There is no autopilot. But everything that happens is directly connected to one's masim, one's actions, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a place where you feel that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So just like, one second, just like we have a choice, we may be commanded to live in Israel, but at the end of the day, we have a choice. We can live an Egypt life, where things will be easier and we won't have as much connection to Hashem, where Hashem says, go ahead, not necessarily the punishment of the Nachash, not that far, not I don't want to hear from you, I don't want your prayer, I don't want anything, but a relationship where it's more on autopilot, less hashkacha pratit, less divine providence day to day, moment to moment. We can choose to that, or we can choose to live in Israel. Once we choose to live in Israel in the palace of the king, then our responsibility goes up, and so does our opportunity. The same thing is true of tefillah. Just like we can choose between an Egypt existence and an Israel existence, we can choose to have a prayer existence, or we can choose to function outside of the prayer existence. As Rabbi Nachman said, God may give you food, clothing, source number 6. God may give you food, clothing, and everything else you need, even though you do not ask for them. That's clearly true. But then you are like an animal. God gives every living thing its bread without being asked. He can give it to you this way. But if you do not draw your life through prayer, it is like that of a beast. A man must, is duty bound to, draw all necessities of life from God through prayer alone. And it's, by the way, as we know, it's not all or nothing. We can choose to live a very prayerful life, or we can choose to live a minimally prayerful. It's not only two options, right? You could choose to live in Tel Aviv, you could choose to live in Yerushalayim, you could choose to live in the Old City. There are different levels of this idea. There are things that we get that we didn't pray for. But we have the choice to enter into a prayer relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Will we sometimes not get something because we didn't pray? Yes. Will we occasionally get less because, like Moshe Rabbeinu, we didn't say the words? Could be. But the flip side is that next time we'll talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu more, we'll have a closer relationship with the king. Imagine a kingdom where all of the servants line up for this massive buffet every single day, three times a day. And they're lined up, and they just get their food, and at first they're so excited that it came from the king, and wow, we must have a wonderful king here. And every day they just get on this line until, like anything else, this just becomes the way they function, and they just get on the line. They can make a certain choices. They can ask this food or that food. They have a choice on the side dishes. But for the most part, they just go forward with their plate, and they take food every day. One day, the princess is walking around, and she sees this interesting line. So she says, that's interesting. I'm going to get on the line. I'm going to see what's going on over there. And the princess gets on the line, and she finds, and there's food. She eats her food. Nobody recognizes her. She does this one day. She does it 2 days. She keeps sneaking out for lunch every day, and she notices that when she's out there, it's a little simpler. She doesn't have to sit with her mom and dad, with the king and the queen. She doesn't have to behave the way that she did before. She doesn't have to say, she doesn't have to follow the formalities of the kingdom. And she begins to get used to that till she's finally out there more than she's inside. One day somebody recognizes her. One of the servants of the king who's on this buffet line recognizes her. He says, what are you doing here? You're a princess. And she says, he says, you're a princess. How could you not be sitting in the castle? How could you not be sitting there at the table with the king and the queen? Yes, you don't have to do, or you don't have to follow all the rules. You get to talk this way. But compared to the opportunity to sit every day with the king and the queen, the opportunity to get your meals cultivated, to get your meals procured in a way that every single detail is exact for what your diet needs and what's happening, to have your meals prepared for exactly what's going to happen for you the next morning, even though you don't know because the whole schedule is arranged, why would you be out on the line with everybody else if you could be sitting and eating with the king and the queen? That's what it means to choose the ma'arechet, the framework of tefillah. So it is true that we could get whatever we want. It is true. We could get things without tefillah. But do we really want to live in that place? Tefillah is an opportunity that we have every single moment, not just formal tefillah, to take our everyday life and to bring the king and the queen into our world. To bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bring the Shechina, to bring it into the world. Look at this beautiful piece by Rabbi Soloveitchik, source number 7. When is man in awe of God's glory? When he senses his presence and discovers him. When man himself is the discoverer. We can function in a way that there's no connection between God and the things that we could live in Egypt lifestyle, wherever we are. We could live a non-prayer existence where we just go about the world as 99% of the creatures in the world do and have God have nothing to do with our lives. The manifestation of the Shechina depends on man himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as powerful as he is, decides to stay out of this world unless we bring him in. He doesn't insist on tefillah. He offers tefillah. He offers tefillah. He doesn't insist on it. He is the most powerful being in the world, but he has decided that whether or not he's going to show up in this room is dependent on me. It can be a snack, or it could be a recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I utter the name of Hashem, Baruch Atah Hashem, I bring him into this world. Man can, if he wants, seek and find God in any phenomenon, at any time, in any place, in the sunrise and sunset, in the sea and in the flowering plants, in the stars and in the sand, in the world around him and within himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. But he's waiting for us to let him in. Famously, one student once asked the Rebbe of Kutsk, Rebbe Nachum Mendel of Kutsk, where is God? And he responded, wherever you let him in. But the flip side of that story is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to come through the door. He chooses to stay invisible until we bring him in. Likewise, when a Jew partakes in a meal, once he recites the formula, blessed are you, the Shekhinah is present, found in every slice of fruit, every blossom, every sip of water, every gesture of the hand. He discovers the Creator in each of these. Every phenomenon is an occasion for a direct encounter with you. I can go about my life and I will be fine. He may be mad at me if I used to daven and I stop davening. There might be a reward and punishment aspect to that. But at the end of the day, if I don't pray, I can get things. Most of the world gets things. But man will be deprived. I will be deprived of the incredible opportunity of bringing things into the world through the hand of Hashem, of taking everyday life and connecting it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's so hard to understand, why did he leave that to us? He's so good at these things. He could do anything. He could make himself a parent in a second. But the most important thing in this world he left to us, which is to use our words to bring him into everyday life. I could stand on that line, the buffet. I could stand on that line, but then I'll miss what it means to be living in the palace of the king and serving a global cosmic purpose. Consequently, the bracha of be fertile and increase is realized. The Shekhinah expands. The Shekhinah expands. We say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Baruch Atah Hashem. Baruch, you are blessed. What do you mean you are blessed? Blessed means more. How could there be more HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What do we say every time we say a bracha, and every time we say a bracha in Shemoneh Esrei? What does it mean you are more? HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't be more. The answer is that he allowed himself to be diminished or increased, his presence in this world, based on me. When I say Baruch Atah Hashem, I bring him into this spot. I bring him into this spot. The reality is, when I ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something, regardless if he says yes or no, I've accomplished something cosmic. I brought Hashem into this little dark place in the world. A place that was godless. What is Chilul Hashem? Chilul Halal is a place that's empty. Every time I say a bracha, I take a place that's empty, and I fill God with it. Who cares if he says yes? Okay, it's our life. We need a yes every once in a while. Every time I pray for something, when do I pray? I pray when it looks like God is not here. I pray when something's wrong. When something's wrong, it looks like God isn't here. When I pray for it, I take God and I bring him into the world. And I'm responsible for that, by the way. Every one of us knows things that are wrong that the others don't. Every one of us has a house that has its own problems and has a family that has its own problems and goes to work or passes a street that has its own thing. Every one of us is on constant duty for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every time we see something wrong and we utter a tefillah, whether it's in Shemoneh Esrei or it's just a word, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You see someone on the street has crutches. Give him a refuah shleima. You just brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world in that spot. And he relies on me and you, because none of us could be everywhere. Will the person get better if we don't daven for them? Maybe and maybe not. But we bring the world slowly into the marechet of tefillah. Finally, there's another reason why we should be davening for the things that we get. And that's because it creates a special relationship. It's not just the question of being ingracious, not thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We could get everything and never say thank you. That's terrible. But by asking him for things, and then he often says no. We spent several weeks talking about his no's. Once in a while, he says yes. There's a famous story mentioned in the Gemara about the time that Chana brings Shmuel to the Mishkan. Chana brings Shmuel, little baby Shmuel, right? She was praying one of the most famous prayers in history. You should know the Gemara in Brachos on Daf 31. Basically learns many of the laws of Tefillah from Chana's Tefillah. Have any of you been to that spot? Unbelievable to daven. It's one of our favorite spots in the world. You can go to Shiloh. Maybe this week isn't the best week, but you can go to Shiloh at Navy Dafka this week. And you could stand on the spot that Chana prayed. The mountain is such in Shiloh that we know exactly where the Mishkan was. The way the mountain is structured and the way the, what is that called? The topography? The topography of the mountain, there's a flat spot that's the size of the Mishkan. You know exactly where the Mishkan stood. It's allowed today even to stand on the Kodesh HaKodashim. The holiness doesn't reside there like it does in Yerushalayim. And it's really weird. I remember the first time I went there talking to Rav Shechter, like, I actually stand. We know the Aron was there, right? But you could stand there. And you could also stand exactly in the spot, and they have the whole psukim there and everything. You could pray at the place that Chana prayed for a baby. Chana prays, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives her Shmuel. She promises that she's going to bring Shmuel back, right? She's going to bring Shmuel back, and he's going to live his life in the Mishkan. He's 2 years old, 3 years old, comes and brings him back. Shmuel's a very smart young man, child prodigy. Very smart kid. And he sees something going on, says the Gemara, he sees something going on in the Mishkan, and he jumps up and says, you know how to do that. Whatever the story was. Unfortunately, his boss, the Gadol Hador, the Kohen Gadol, Eli, is standing there. It turns out Shmuel's right, but he acted disrespectfully. It was disrespectful for him to speak up as a little kid in front of his rabbi. In fact, the Gemara says that the punishment for being more halacha lefnei rabo, for paskening a halacha right in front of your rabbi, is death in the hands of heaven. Death at the hands of heaven. Chana is there that day. And Eli informs her that her child is going to die. And that's why she says, if you look at the second line, the last source, Elanara zehispalalti, v'yitein Hashem liyas she'elosi asher sha'alti me'imo. The reason she says, he wasn't just the simple pshat in the pasuk, is that she was just saying, oh, this is my child. It was the moment she brought him in the first place, and she said, this is the baby that I remember, the whole scene. Remember a couple years ago? Well, Baruch Hashem, I had a baby, and now I'm bringing the baby here. But the Gemara says, no. She was pleading with him. How can you allow a Kadosh Baruch Hu to kill this baby? Right? Elanar hazeh yisbalalti. This is the baby that I prayed for. How can you allow it? Eli says, no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to kill the child. But don't worry. Just like 3 years ago, when I mistook you for a woman who was drunk, and I gave you a blessing then, a blessing from the Kohen Gadol, and you had a baby, so too, you'll have another baby. Don't worry. A little strange thing to say to a mom. Don't worry, you'll have another baby. And she repeats to him again, no. Elanar hazeh yisbalalti. No. You can't say that to a mom. This is the baby. I don't want another baby. He says, it's going to be exactly the same. It's going to be just as great. What are you talking about? Elanar hazeh yisbalalti. What are you talking about? And she wins. And he remains alive. But the Maharsha, Rabbi Dels, says we're pronouncing the pasuk wrong. Chana didn't say Elanar hazeh yisbalalti. She wasn't saying, I only want this kid. Because Eli was saying, I'll give you mamish, it'll be a carbon copy of the kid. I'll pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you'll start again. She said, Elanarazeh, hispalalti. This was the child that came through my tefillah. If you bring me another child through your tefillah, then it'll never be the same. Not Elanar Hazeh hispalalti. That I only want this child because he's great, because he's wonderful, because I'm a mother, because I have feelings, because I'd never want to see him go. But Elanar Hazeh hispalalti. Do you know why he's so special to me? Because every time I look at his face, I see the face of Hashem. Because every time I cuddle him, I feel like I'm hugging the Ribono Shalom. Because I prayed and I heard him say yes. And he doesn't always say yes. And for many years he said no. And I wasn't sure if he was out there. But now, every time I think of Shmuel, I think of him. We can choose to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu where things come without us asking. It may not be the same level of Hashkacha, but we'll probably get it. It may not be really properly thank him, but we'll get it. It may not cause us to be better religiously, but we'll get it. But when we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we ask for something and then it comes, it's like a bracelet that I got from my beloved. My everyday life, the things that I do have are suddenly not just my possessions, my family. They're gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in their faces. I see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in everything that I have. And that's worth so much more than the little time that I spend davening or the extra effort that I have to make. So, b'sikum, we learned that we could choose to live a life without davening. But why would we? Why would we? Davening is the equivalent of choosing a life in Israel. Choosing a life that's connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Choosing a life where we see him in our everyday lives. Choosing a life where we have the ability to bring him into a sandwich. You have to bring him into a cup of coffee. It's not a cup of coffee. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to look at the things that we have and to look at him that way. That gift is something that we dare not throw away. I really enjoyed learning together. And I hope Mirtz Hashem will have an opportunity at some point to continue. And I hope that all of our tefillos, I know that talking about it myself helps me as well, so thank you for the opportunity.